Go ahead.
Yeah, you're welcome, JJ. Okay, so our theme today is the Fellowship of the Spirit, and it comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the Fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 164. And now I'm going to turn it over to Cynthia, who's going to lead us out in prayer.
Hi, Nikki.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. All right. Step 6, humility prayer. Lord, I am far too much influenced by what people think of me, which means I am always pretending to be either richer or smarter or nicer than I really am. Please prevent me from trying to attract attention. Don't let me gloat over praise on the one hand or be discouraged by criticism on the other, nor let me waste time weaving imaginary situations in which the most heroic, charming, witty person present is myself. Show me how to be humble of heart like you. With that, I will pass it to
Ashley.
Great.
Hey guys, my name is Ashley Patzner and I am an alcoholic. I will be reading from page 100, the first full paragraph for Judah's choice of reading out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were far better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. It is my great honor and privilege to introduce Judith R. from Bismarck, North Dakota. She has been absolutely instrumental in my recovery and one of my greatest teachers.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Can you hear me? It's all good. All right. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to speak today. Thank you for everyone who is putting this on behind the scenes. I know the work it takes and the dedication, and you guys are doing a fantastic job. I love you all, and shout out to Mike and everybody else behind the scenes. My heart, I'm old, okay? I'm old, but my heart is with you guys in Waipaw. I think it's, I'm one of your biggest fans, and I count it as a huge blessing to be invited, even though I'm old. So kudos to all you guys. And I love the fact that there's young people in Alcoholics Anonymous that not only love to have fun, but carry a strong message. And man, you guys carry a strong message. So I appreciate that. And thank you so much. So 6 and 7. Oh man, you guys gave me the steps. Oh, first of all, I guess I should say, I'm Judith and I'm an alcoholic. And I should also, I just want to jump right into everything. I'm very enthusiastic. I love how it was pointed out what the root word of enthusiasm is. I was taught that very early on. And I think what a instrument or what a reflection and testament of this program, if my life has enthusiasm. I love that. So thank you for sharing that. And also that prayer, that 6-step prayer. I have never heard that before. And I'm like, I need a copy of that. Okay. Someone, Ashley, make sure I get a copy. That is amazing. I'm like, well, that's just my talk right there. You guys may as well go home. It covered everything that I am going to be talking about. So thank you for that. I don't know how I've missed it, but I've not heard that before. I want to say a few things before I jump in with enthusiasm to step 6 and 7. And that is, I have a few things that I always like to say at the beginning, because these things have kept me smack dab in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is where I need to stay if I want to stay healthy, both physically, of course, away from alcohol, but also happy in my sobriety and healthy, spiritually speaking. There's a few things that are vital to me. And number one is my sobriety date. And that is January the 19th, 2009. It is the most important day of my life. And I do something every single day to protect that date. I don't take it for granted. And I never want to go back. There's a line in the book I love that talks about, I have left that express train through hell. And I've accepted a happier, joyful life. And I have gotten off that express train through hell. And I don't take it for granted. I am sober now 11 years, and I have not forgotten. I was given the gift of desperation, and I've never once I've never taken it for granted. So I protect that date. The other thing I have is that I found is vital is I have a sponsor. And as I joke, my sponsor knows they're my sponsor. I use my sponsor. I like to say that I have been given to my sponsor to teach my sponsor the gift of patience and tolerance. But I love my sponsor, and I'm so grateful for the gift of time that has been given to me, guiding me through the steps. And then even though I've been through the steps long ago, continuing to spiritually guide me and turning me back over and over and over back to the book, back to these principles that we learn when I come face to face or come smack dab up in something in life, which directly usually involves 6 and 7 things in my life. I have to keep being turned back. It's so great to have somebody who is grounded in the big book and spiritual principles, who loves me for my highest good, but is not emotionally attached to my life, and so can tell me the truth about myself and hold up the mirror of truth for me to look into. I'm not the biggest fan all the time of doing that, but I am very grateful for it. I also have the immense pleasure and privilege of sponsoring women. And that has become, not to use an old tired cliche, but it has become the bright spot of my life and what was read as far as both you and the new man or woman must walk daily in this path. And I walk daily with these women, and that is new for me. That is something that still shocks me because in the old me, never did anything for anyone unless there was something in it for me. You know, I'd hang out with you if you had really, really good, a lot of alcohol or cocaine, then I'd hang out with you. But when that left, or I left, and for me to care about and to help other women without any gain in it for me, is extraordinary. Now I get that I do get spiritual gain, but I'm talking material and the old me. I also have a home group. It's called The Three Legacies. It's on Thursday. We've been Zooming for years. This isn't new for us. We Zoom to people out, you know, far away and help try and be in, of service. And if you want to join us, that would be fantastic. Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Time. We go through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts, and we have fun. So those are the things that I have found that are vital for me to not only stay sober, but to stay sober and happy. Two things I never thought could happen at the same time. Now I'm supposed to talk about 6 and 7, and so I don't have much time for my story. But what I want to tell you is that the obsession for, let me put it this way. I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic, a criminal. Drugs are part of my story. I've been through 2 marriages, countless relationships, big problem in my area, in that is a problem area in my life. I would exchange anything and everything for alcohol. And I went to the gates of insanity and hell and death. It was a living hell. But and the other thing I want to say is I came into AA and I refused to get a sponsor and I refused to work the steps for 11 and a half months. I did not miss a day without going to an AA meeting. I went to AA. I sat in a chair. I would have told you I was in AA, but the truth of the matter is I was observing AA. I was watching you all do AA, and I was absolutely miserable. I was not happy in my sobriety at all. And in fact, I was unraveling inside out. At 11 and a half months of being dry, sitting in the rooms in the middle of you for 11 and a half months, refusing to do your steps because I didn't want to do this whole G-O-D thing and I wasn't going to bend the knee to anyone. I had a loaded pistol and I was going to take my life. And a series of events that occurred involving the FBI and all sorts of exciting things happened. And I believe it was intervention from a power greater than myself. I thought my life was over, but really it was just beginning because what it did was it got me out from where I was in the place I was living, observing AA, and I got transplanted somewhere else, smack dab into a big book, step AA community, strong, vibrant, alive, enthusiastic AA community. And I was pretty much appointed a sponsor and my sponsor kicked my butt through the steps and my life started changing. I don't know. I know for sure, put it that way. I know for sure I wouldn't be alive today had all that happened. And at the time, it was the biggest disaster that could ever happen to me. Career, life, upheaval, income, everything. I looked at it as the biggest disaster. And now I see it as the greatest gift that was ever given to me. And it set me on a completely new path in life. So that's just to say, to bring me up to these steps. And I wanted to start with saying that I am a slow learner. The obsession to drink, the obsession for alcohol was with me strong until well into my second year. Some point during my second to third year, it was removed because remember, I wasn't working the steps until 11 and a half months into being sober. So it took me a while and it was strong on me. And I used to hear people talk about, I came into AA and said a prayer and the obsession was removed and I've never thought about drinking ever again. And I'm thinking, well, obviously I've done something wrong or whatever, because it was hard on me. And then I loved reading Dr. Bob's story in the back of the book. And one of our founders struggled with the obsession to drink for several years. That made me feel a little bit better. I'm like, all right, well, at least, you know, I'm doing something and I'm taking the steps and I'm going to be okay if I do something every day as outlined in the big book. And I worked my steps to the best of my ability every day. And then sometime, I don't know when you would think something that big, there should be trumpets or something. Like, okay, today's the day your obsession is going to be removed. And I don't know when it was. I just know that sometime during my, you know, around my third year, whatever, and I'm working with a sponsee and I'm talking to her about the obsession, the mental obsession. And all of a sudden I just stopped in my conversation and it occurred to me, I haven't thought about that. The mental obsession I haven't thought about drinking. And I said, hang on a minute. And I had to sit there and think about it for a while, trying to, I was going back like through my Rolodex of memories. When's the last time? When's the last time I remember feeling this obsession? And I couldn't, you know, it had been so long. While I was busy doing what I was supposed to be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, being of service, working my steps, helping others, I'm over here doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And my higher power is back here. And it just, and just removed the obsession. And as long as I do what I'm supposed to be doing, I have a daily reprieve. And that obsession doesn't come back. And it's fantastic. So so that's why where I'm going to start on 6 and 7. So the, you know, I've been sober for a while. And then somewhere around my, you know, third year, late second year, the obsession was removed, and I daily work a program of action to the best of my ability. I got, you know, a new life and enthusiasm. So how I started my process after step 1 and 2, you know, I really had a struggle with step 3, and I need to like kind of back up a little bit. So, and deal with that before I even get to 6 and 7, because step 3 was my big hindrance in this whole thing. Because I, like I said, I wouldn't bend the knee to any power greater than myself and my self-reliance. So I had to make that decision to turn absolutely everything that involves me over to my higher power. My sponsor explained it like this. You know, we talk about decision in step 3, decision in step 3. And I was taught that a decision not married with action is a fantasy. And so I don't claim to make a decision unless there's action married to it. And I know I've made a decision based upon the actions that I take. So I finally did tackle that. Step 3, and it changed my sobriety. I'll have to tell you, it was around year 4 when I actually hit that wall where I had to fully address that step 3. I was working the steps. I was, to the best of my ability, but there was still this resistance. I still am like living my life for me, for more, for, you know, and my behavior was not the best in early sobriety. I got myself into a few pickles and a few of my character defects that I clung to. And granted, I share in a general way because I do not want to hurt people. And I can't share certain things that would harm people. And so some things my sponsor knows, and only my sponsor knows. But there are some areas in my life well into sobriety that I clung to. And I had bad behavior. Bad behavior meaning I hurt and harmed others, including myself. And so 6 and 7 have been, they've been the most painful steps. You know, some people talk about step 3 was very, very, very difficult for me. And other people talk about 4 and 5. Oh, my God, 4 and 5, you know, scary 4 and 5. But I kid, and amends is uncomfortable, and amends is a little scary, too. But bar none, the steps that have absolutely been the most painful to me have been 6 and 7. And they're so short in the book, and they're so short to overlook, and they're so short, you know, it's just like, we just can ignore them to our own detriment. But I tell you that they have been the most significant steps in all of my in my step work. I keep coming back. My sponsor says step 6 and 7 are like step 1 for the rest of your life. Going back, going back, going back. So then I had to do, of course, I did a thorough, honest, brave moral inventory. And what that did for me, in 4 and 5 was to raise the awareness, to raise my awareness of what is going on in my life and how I operate in life, because I was so asleep spiritually that I had no clue of why things were the way things were in my life. I just thought it was all you guys' fault, you know? It was his fault. And I got rid of him and got another him, and, well, it's his fault now too, you know? And it's not that this was obvious or aware. It was just all this, I never could find what I was looking for. I think that's a song by you two, actually. I've never found what I was looking for. And so I get these things, you know, I'll be happy when. And I'm willing to go to any lengths to get what I want. I really am. That's the type of alcoholic I am. And I would get so many of these whens, I'll be happy when, right? And then I may be happy for a day, a month, a year. And then the shine wears off and I'm off and running again to find the next win because there's still something wrong. There's still something wrong with me. So I needed to look at what was underneath, what I rationalized in my behavior, my attitudes, my beliefs, my old ideas. What did I defend? And my sponsor always says, making a mistake isn't going to kill me or get me drunk. But defending my mistakes, defending my dishonesty, defending it, justifying it, rationalizing it, excusing it, that is what is going to kill me. And that took a lot of courage for me because my entire life I had run from, I was so unaware. I was so spiritually asleep and unaware. So, a while ago, this morning I was doing a fifth step, and I loved when I started working with this one particular sponsee. She had mentioned to me that she wanted, I was like, okay, why do you want to work with me? Whatever. And that's great. And let's chit chat a little bit. And I said, why do you want to work with me? And she said, because I want a high definition life. And I can totally relate to that. I've always wanted a high definition life before and after drinking. I want life in high def. I really do. And the thing is that is one of the things step 6 and 7 does for me. It brings my life into high definition. I've never been content with anything less. And I'm not content with AA. That's less than high definition. But the problem is I have two major difficulties with step 6 and 7. And that is, after I did step 4 and 5, it was no more a matter of needing more information. I had my inventory. I had all the information that I needed of what was blocking me in life. And I was very well aware of how I've been operating. What I needed was more willingness. And the first difficulty is that I still want to manage my life, and yours, by the way, because I think I know what's best. And I still cling. It's very difficult to rewire that thinking of I'll be happy when that is how I've lived my entire life. You know, step 6 and 7, anything I have stopped clinging to, I don't do it gracefully and I don't do it with style. It is like, my sponsor jokes about, it's like anything has got claw marks on it, you know, as I'm like, okay, I'll let it go. But there's just my claw marks on it as I'm clinging to it. So it's a matter of awareness, not more information, after my 4th and 5th, and becoming the more aware of what I see, the more objectionable it becomes. I have a friend that says, especially in the area of relationships, which was one of my big problem areas well into sobriety. And I'm probably gonna mess this up, but one of my friends says, I'm no longer willing to selfishly use one of God's kids. Something like that. I think he says it better than that. I'm no longer willing to use one of God's kids for my own self-centeredness. You get the drift. So I knew what was wrong with me. I knew what was blocking me from my happiness. I knew what was blocking me from you, from myself and my higher power. I knew what was blocking me. It wasn't information. I always knew deep down, you know, but what I needed was more awareness. And as that awareness raises, it becomes more and more objectionable. I needed to see my misguided actions. And as I saw them, I could then see the defect underneath them. And what I mean by that is, I think I have money problems and that they have to do with money. I think I have a work problem and I think it has to do with work. I may have a relationship problem and I think it has to do with the relationship or that person. I can identify the symptom rather than the cause. I don't know if that makes any sense. But I could see, you know, I saw my misguided action. But then I had to get awareness of what the defect of character was underneath it. And it always comes back to me, which I did not like. So that was my first difficulty. And the second difficulty in step 6 and 7 is that I don't really know what stands in the way of me being useful to God and to others. When I'm running this show, I know that most of my personality traits are definitely defects of character, meaning I am very strong-willed. I am very focused. I don't take no for an answer. I get in my business mode, or I'm actually an attorney by trade. And people accuse me of getting into lawyer mode. And when I'm in that mode, I will steamroll over any one of you to get what I want. That's my personality when I am Judith-centered. But, and so I may just, you know, say, oh God, you know, my higher power, please remove this strong-willed and this strong personality and things like that. But what I've found is I don't even know if that is something that needs to be removed, because here's the deal that I'm finding is that you can take those exact same traits in my personality that are there. They're a part of me. And if they're Judith-centered, they're extremely destructive and they're harmful to you and they're harmful to me. But when it's God-centered or spiritual principle-centered or higher power-centered, I don't care what word you want to use. I hated the G-O-D word, okay? But I use that. It's just quicker, okay? So when it's God-centered, those very same things, those strong things in my personality, that driven, that if someone tells me no, I'm thinking, is it really no, or is there a way around this? That when it's God-centered, when I'm trying to serve God and God's kids, that part of my personality has been tremendously effective in doing a lot of good things for people. It has developed programs. It's developed service work in AA. It's developed conferences. It's developed a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. So the bottom line is I don't know what needs to be removed or what stands in the way of God, of serving God. what I do know is the underlying cause of my problems is selfishness and self-centeredness. And so the first thing I got to do, and the starting place is when I just need to get out of Judith being the center of the universe and having my agenda as being the main priority and my primary purpose in life, and shift it to bending the knee and being willing to live my life for a new primary purpose, which in the book says to serve God and God's kids. And so the very things in me that can cause me problems end up being assets if my whole core of how I live changes. So you can see 6 and 7, there's a lot packed into this, and there's a lot more too than, oh God, I don't want to steal anymore, or I don't want to be, you know, having that affair with that married man anymore. A lot of things, you know, it's not just that, it's not the behavior and the actions. I need to get down to the fundamental core of what is my primary purpose in life. And step 6 and 7 help me understand what the primary purpose of my life is and how to stay on track. So I you know, the one thing that I can do in 6 and 7 is that I look at my current area of brokenness, even today. My current area of brokenness, I can't always identify what needs to be removed from me that's a character defect, but I know where my current area of brokenness is. The noise, and as the book calls them, the worldly clamors in my head, the overdependence on people, that's a big one for me. That's an area of brokenness. What do you think about me? Are you all there judging me right now? You know, how am I looking? Do you like me? Are you going to hurt me? Are you going to reject me? Me, I, you know. Overdependence on people. Overdependence on men. Validation. Affection, attention. Selling my identity to the judges of the world. Hustling for worthiness. I have a desperate need. Often when I am not spiritually centered, I have a desperate need for attention, affirmation, acceptance, approval. I have this self-centered fear. And then I react and I act out. And then you're going to see some actions that really are not in line with how I say I want to live. I have self-centered delusions. it's crazy. But the tendency to go into my head rather than my heart all the time, relying on self rather than the God within. You know, I get afraid. And that's what step 6 and 7 is about. It's about raising this spiritual awareness in my life. So it boils down to you know, like I said, a basic problem that the book says is the root of my problem, and that is selfishness and self-centeredness. So I refer to self as ego. It's just, you know, the shorthand of ego. And I don't like to think, I don't usually think I have an ego. And the funny thing is I came into AA with self-loathing. I had no self-esteem, none whatsoever. And I was frightened. I came across arrogant, cocky, confident, you know, or maybe stuck up. But really, I'm shy. I'm extremely shy. I'm an introvert and I'm very afraid. So I don't usually think that my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. I came in with a lot of self-loathing. And my sponsor always points out that whether I am despising myself or loving myself like I'm all that, it's the same quarter, but different sides, heads or tails. You know, because all I'm doing is thinking about me. Whether I'm loathing myself or loving myself, you know, I'm not saying in a healthy way loving myself, but you know what I'm saying. It's still pride and ego. So from my experience, my ego's default condition is not very healthy. In fact, it is what I describe as empty, painful, busy, and fragile. My ego is empty, painful, busy, fragile. And what I mean by that is empty. The first one, empty. I in my life, and that's why 6 and 7 are so meaningful to me, is that I continue to have the delusion that I'm able to run my own life. I foolishly think that I can achieve a sense of purpose. A sense of purpose that is big enough to give me meaning without including a higher power. And I'm empty. I used to build my identity around power and prestige and possessions. And I had a lot. But you know what? There was never enough. There was never enough of any of those. I always needed more. And then so my ego is empty, and it's also painful. And I describe it to my sponsees this way, and in that I didn't wake up this morning and look at my elbow and just say, oh my gosh, my elbow is fantastic. Look, it's doing its job. It's moving. It's wonderful. Look at how well my elbow is working. I never do that. That sounds insane. And I never talk about, my toes. My toes are fabulous today, and they're doing their job, and they're working. I don't notice my toes. I don't notice any part of my body unless it's not working, unless there's something wrong. I don't notice my toe unless I stub it on a table or something. Then I notice my toe. This morning, I woke up with an enormous headache, migraine, whatever. I don't normally notice my head unless it's not working properly. And then I notice my headache. So I don't notice these things unless there's something wrong with them, unless they're painful. So obviously my ego has something terribly wrong with it because it draws attention to itself every single day. How am I looking? How am I being treated? She looked at me wrong. She didn't say something nice to me. Right? I used to tell my sponsor that my feelings are hurt. And my sponsor would say, your feelings aren't hurt. It's your ego that's hurt. Your feelings are fine. Right? Painful, painful. Always drawing attention to itself, me, 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 I, always walking into every situation, asking the question subconsciously, this isn't conscious at all, but subconsciously always asking the question, what about me? Are they going to be nice to me? Am I going to be included? Am I going to have fun? Is anyone going to talk to me? Am I going to fit in? Always painful. And the funny thing is I if I'm looking for the evidence, I'll find it. The third one that I describe as the default of my ego is busy. I'm constantly trying to fill the emptiness inside with people, like I said, attention, affection, affirmation, approval, validation. I'll be happy when I'm constantly, you know, when I get this, when I get that, when I get him, when I get rid of him and get him, constantly trying to fill the emptiness inside, always comparing and contrasting. And the funny thing is that I normally don't get joy from having something. I only get joy from having something that's better than you. I can have something. I was just talking to someone today and someone got a bonus unexpected. All right. And we're talking, I believe it was like a $300 bonus and they're new in sobriety. That's a chunk of change when you're new in sobriety. They got a bonus and they were so happy about it until they found out that the other person that was working there, different job, but still, you know, different position, they got 700. And it absolutely robbed the joy of their $300 bonus. And I'm like, I can so identify with that. I am so busy comparing and contrasting. And it's not that what I have, I don't find joy in that. I find joy in if it's better than what you have, if I am more important, or if I'm valued more, or I get more. You know, I heard someone once say that the one thing that, I don't know, that they're addicted to, or that they were addicted to far before alcohol or drugs, was more. And I can relate to that. And the last thing I say about my default condition of my ego is that it's fragile. And here what I found is if my ego is either puffed up with me or empty, you know, whether I have grandiose ideas about and pride, or whether I have self-loathing and it's deflated, rather than filled up with my higher power, it is always going to be sensitive and it's always going to be in pain. I have a quote that I love, and I want to read it to you because it's not AA, but it's AA says, be quick to see where other people have things that are useful spiritually. And it says, it's from Kierkegaard, and it says, it is the normal state of the human heart to try and build its identity around something besides God. Spiritual pride is the illusion that we are competent to run our own lives, achieve our own sense of self-worth, and find a purpose big enough to give us meaning in life without God. And that's me. I'm trying to build an identity around anything other than a higher power. Anything. Give me anything. I'll try anything before AA. And I did. This spiritual pride that I'm competent to run my own life, that I can find self-worth or purpose apart from having this power. He nails me. And that's how I've lived. So in step 6 and 7, I found that surrender is not something that's easily accessible to me at all. And even though I know this process, it doesn't mean that I love it. I love that one of my favorite speakers is Bob D from Minneapolis. I love that guy. He's like, him and Sandy Beach used to do these weekends together. I just love them. They blow my mind. It's just like, I don't understand, you know, 75% of what they're talking about, but man, is it good, you know. But Bob D always talks about, we can starve to death while eating the menu. And that's just me. You know, I can starve to death eating the menu instead of ordering it to, you know, it's crazy. So then the question becomes in my life is that, do I want relief or do I want recovery? I need to be honest about that. Because sometimes I'm pretty okay with just giving me relief. I want instant relief. And I can find relief in a relationship. That's the first go-to that when I was separated from alcohol and drugs, my go-to was a relationship. And I can get relief for a while. My ego clings to getting its own way. And the reason I think it's so hard for me is because it feels like death. And it talks about the death of ego. I'm like, okay, I can relate to that because it feels like the death of ego to me. The deflation of ego, the death of self. Well, yeah, it feels like death. This isn't an easy process for someone like me. So by step six, I was physically sober, but my spiritual malady, my spiritual sickness showed up in so many other ways. And I didn't really want to know what was blocking me. I was afraid. I was afraid of what the cost was going to be. What am I going to lose? I used to think that if I was going to do this spiritual way of life, you know, I'd have to be a nun, go to, you know, some foreign country and be, and my sponsor's like, yeah, God doesn't want you. They wouldn't take you as a nun. It's like, very true. Okay, point taken. But I didn't know what I was going to lose, except that I was pretty sure I was going to lose my way. And that is very scary. So what I do is I only talk about what I want to change. I don't discuss the part of me that doesn't want to change. I stay right in the middle, bouncing back and forth. And what my sponsor calls is a complaint. It doesn't sound like a complaint to me. Doesn't sound like a complaint because I'm saying things like, oh, I really want, I want to be free of this. I want to stop clinging to this. I really want to do X, Y, and Z. So it doesn't sound like I'm complaining because I'm saying I want to do it. Let me give you the example that I always give. All right. I'm a little out of shape. And I need to, you know, I should go to the gym. I really want to be healthy. So I say it all the time. I really want to get in shape. I really want to be healthy. I really want to do, you know, whatever. And you know, I got to check my time here. I want, you know, maybe I want to run or whatever. You know, I really want this. One thing I always talk about is that I really, really want to be good at yoga. I use this a lot because I talk about it a lot. I still talk about it a lot. I really, really want to be like this fantastic. I see all these pictures of all these poses and doing these incredible things. And I really, really want that. I really want to look like that. And I want to be able to do that. And I say that, right? So it sounds like, it doesn't sound like a complaint at all. I've got a gym membership. They do yoga there. I actually went and bought a lot of cute yoga outfits. I look good in these yoga outfits, right? I'll even put them on. But I've yet to go to a yoga class. I haven't been, right? Okay, I've been to maybe one or two. And then I think I'm supposed to be some yoga master or something. But I won't go. I just keep talking about it. And I keep telling you that I want to do yoga. I really want to do. I want to be a yogi, right? I want that. But it doesn't rise beyond this level of a complaint. I say that I want to be out of debt. I talk about, you know, I actually am now, but in the past, because I had to get serious about taking action with living within my means. But I used to say, I want to get out of debt. I want to get out of debt. I'm tired of living month to month. And then emergencies happen and I'm always in debt and I can't pay for something. I want to be out of debt. I would say that over and over. But I really want those really cute shoes too. You know, I really want that car that I really can't afford, but oh, I'll make the monthly payments. I really want to go on that trip. I'll use my credit card. I'll pay the piper later, right? And I didn't get out of debt until I made it a matter of spiritual business, until I raised that awareness and I could not only see the action, but the defect of character underneath it. Because I want relief, not recovery. I want to be out of debt, but I don't want the work it takes to get out of debt. I want to be good at yoga, but I don't want to get in my car and drive to the gym and actually do yoga. And the same thing applies to my spiritual way of life. I want to be honest, which is the lack of any intention to deceive, either by omission or commission. Ouch. Because, see, one of my tools of trade is manipulation. And I'm a lawyer, and I know how to use words. Well, you just didn't ask me the right question. You didn't specifically ask me X, Y, and Z. I can spin anything. So that's how, you know, that's where I get stuck sometimes. I say I want change. I say I want a new life. I say I want recovery. But I get stuck at relief because I want immediate and instant gratification. If I can find something to make me feel good right now, I seem to be very willing to settle for it. Oh, man, I bounce from one thing to the other. All to fill that spiritual void. Settling. So I'm spiritually conflicted. Half of me wants change, and half of me wants this transformed life, but half of me is afraid to let go and not get my way. So I don't choose. I don't do anything, and I just hold it here as a complaint. And that's why it's very, very important for me to have a sponsor to hold up that mirror and show me what I'm doing. So in 6 and 7, I just, you know, I use it to raise my conscience about what's going on. And that's what it does. My awareness. They put me smack dab in front of what I'm clinging to, what's blocking me. They show me what I'm clinging to, what I'm willing to let go of, what I'm not willing to let go of. And like I said, it is painful, and everything has claw marks on it, especially relationships. I was talking to someone today because it's a little bit of an anniversary this weekend of something very significant that happened to me. And I'm well into sobriety. And I had to let go. And I thought I was going to die. But it was blocking me. It was blocking me from life. It was blocking me from being connected to myself, to you, to my higher power, and it was absolutely hindering me from being free in life. So in 6 and 7 it says, pray for the willingness. If we're not willing, to pray for the willingness. And the thing of it is I would hide behind that so many times, and I would say to my sponsor, I'm praying to be willing. I'm praying to get willing. And trust me, I hear that a lot from my sponsees as well. I'm praying to be willing or to get willing. And the thing of it is that willingness is demonstrated by me moving my feet. I can't just sit there and check a box. Oh, I prayed for the willingness, and now I go and do exactly what I want to do. I've got to take baby steps. I've got to be willing to take action. My sponsor says, we're going to train your feet, and your heart and mind will follow. And sometimes it takes me a very, very long time. If I really am willing to let something go, then I practice the exact opposite of what it is, not continue to practice the thing that is troublesome to me. I practice the opposite. And my higher power removes or transforms the defect. So one of the things that I really had to deal with, and I've got a few minutes left, but one of the most, and I can't touch on 6 and 7 without touching on the one hindrance, and that was my concept of a higher power. It was toxic, absolutely toxic. And it was way too small. And I have learned that there was an absolute connection between how I see God and how I'm going to address these two steps, all the steps, but these two steps. And I discovered that my concept of God either creates me or defeats me. And if I don't have an interior spiritual journey and willingness to walk through this process, I'm going to be stunted in my growth, in my recovery, in my happiness, my joy, my satisfaction, my peace, my freedom. So what I realized is I needed a mature, workable spiritual practice. And to have a mature, workable practice, I had to have an authentic connection with this higher power. I had to address this faulty, inadequate, unhealthy, and like I said, toxic conception of God. I had to. And it was tough for me because I came in absolutely full of rage, full of hate, and very opposed to anything, any mention of God, any mention of a spiritual way of life. So I had to address that, my toxic image. And I had to find an experience with a higher power that would sustain me. I needed to be able to actually access this higher power. And I went on this journey and I dived into different religions and read stuff. And I turned into a seeker. Because I knew if I'm not happy in my sobriety, I won't stay. And I had to, above all, I had to have an action-based spirituality over mere talking words, pretty Facebook posts or ideas. In the big book, it talks about faith without works is dead. And I had to have action behind everything. So I'm just happy that I don't have to do this alone, that I have a sponsor first and foremost to walk with me through this fire. It's just like my sponsor. I would be toast. I'm also very thankful that I have all of you, the fellowship of AA. I have many teachers in AA, not just my sponsor, but I have many teachers. And I don't have to walk through this fire alone. My sponsor tells me that the way of the spiritual warrior is through the fire. But the good news is that the fire is imaginary anyway. I always think I'm going to get burned up. This is going to hurt. It might hurt, but it's all in my head. It's imaginary. And as I walk through the fire, it disappears. And I'm never alone. So just want to say for me in my life, every single day, like I said, they're this like the step ones for the rest of my life. They are amazing, painful, but vital. And they're just the linchpin in my growth in AA. They give me the ability to have an honest, fearless look at myself. They raise my spiritual awareness. they allow me to have a fuller, more joyful life, better relationships. They keep me connected to you, to my higher power, and connected to myself. I get to be present in my own life. Most of all, they give me life and recovery in high definition. And for that, I am extremely grateful. Thank you so much for letting me share. And thank you for my new life. With that, I'll pass.